Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com.
So excited today for our guest. His name is Patrick Elwood. He is the author of The Collaborative Path. Patrick, welcome to our show today.
Thank you very much, Christopher. I'm thrilled to be here.
So Ralph Waldo Emerson once said that who you are shouts so loudly that what you say I cannot hear. When I was looking at Patrick's profile, looking at his website, watching some of his videos, I can really tell this man is a man of heart, a man of compassion, and a man that really, really, really deeply wants the world to be a better place. And your book, The Collaborative Path, it's really about how can we have less conflict, have a more harmonious workplace. But I'm curious, when did you have this aha moment, this epiphany that this is something that you really wanted to devote your time and your life to?
I would say it really started when I saw some of the research around tension in the workplace and the cost of it. Studies across 9 industrial nations, including the United States of America, showing 2.5 hours per employee per week wasted unproductively on tension in the workplace or conflict. That's a huge factor.
Yeah. And Patrick, you know what's so crazy about when you mentioned that? I still remember 25 years ago, I had a coworker and there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of conflict. And I probably wasted 25 hours, not in a week, but over the course of months. And when you factor that long term, and unfortunately with the stress, the cortisol levels going higher, your immune system going lower. So everyone that's listening and watching, that's an unfortunate number where if it's 2.5 hours a week, that's 10 hours a month, that's 50 hours a year, and hundreds of hours across a lifetime. That's just one employee. There's so much wasted time. So when you came across that figure, did you immediately say, oh my gosh, Christopher, I have to write a book about this, or I have to start talking about this? And from the thought that you had from that bone-crushing research, when did you just actually start taking that pen to paper and saying, you know what, I want to be a force of change and start helping people with this?
That would really be when I started to talk about collaboration, and people would talk about conflict, and I would say, well, there's a positive side to conflict, and there isn't. And I didn't realize that until I tried to start talking about collaboration, and then it shifted for me from I think I realized the huge stigma attached to the word conflict itself. People talk about a positive side of conflict. I used to talk about a positive side of conflict, and there isn't one. That's just a grand illusion that those in the field of conflict resolution have bought into. In reality, as you know from the experience you just talked about, that's not a positive experience.
And Patrick, what's crazy, again, this is a 25 plus year emotional scar I have. Now, thankfully, it worked out better because I actually, unbeknownst to myself at the time, it was a collaborative path. So for you, let's first define, what do you define as conflict in the workplace? And then we'll go into the collaboration and dive into your book. So let's talk about the conflict aspect. What does that mean to you in the cases and the clients you work with in your career?
Conflict at its most simple form is a problem plus tension around its resolution. That's the most simple form. People hear the word conflict and they go, you know, that's awful. We can't deal with that. And yet we solve problems every day, and we deal with tension in every relationship, from our parents to our partners to our pets.
Okay. And then, so that's a conflict part. And obviously there's different degrees of that. Some people might get really angry at work. Some people might, unfortunately, in the US at least, you're Canadian, but in the US, unfortunately, when they say go postal, you have some of these postal workers that unfortunately kill people, right? So there's different extremes. Now, you saw that, you saw the fact that there's no positivity to conflict. Now let's talk about collaboration. How do you define collaboration? And specifically, employees in a workplace, how do you define that in terms of a collaborative effort?
A collaborative effort or a collaborative process is designed to achieve the dual objectives of better solutions to situations and stronger relationships among participants. It's not an either or, it's both.
Can you say that one more time?
A collaborative process is designed to pursue the dual objectives of better solutions to situations and stronger relationships among their participants or problem solvers.
Awesome. Yeah, I wanted our listeners and viewers to really hear that, because it's really about the solutions, because business is all about creating solutions. But without the relationships, it's like that one-man shop. There's a reason why Kobe Bryant was one of the best players in the world. He wasn't very good in the beginning because he wasn't thinking collaboratively. But as soon as he started listening to Phil Jackson, then he became the champion, which he's remembered for. And for you, let's talk about your book. So The Collaborative Path, you mentioned there's six steps, right? Why not seven steps, four steps, three steps? Why six steps?
Good question. Don't know why it ends up being six. I think in part it's because I wanted to make it so that it's easy to learn and easy to use. And so there's only one ball to keep your eye on at each step. And I think breaking it down into six made that a lot easier to do.
Let's talk about that step by step. So let's say again, my former coworker, her name is Michelle, and she just seemed to be always bagging on me, very rude, very demeaning. So let's go from step one to step six so that our listeners and viewers can really get a real taste of how you go about helping people.
Sure. The first step is to set the parameters for the conversation. That is, talk about how are we going to talk about what's not working for us before we get into the actual subject matter. That in and of itself creates an atmosphere of safety and avoids defensiveness. That's step number one.
So you're saying in the very beginning with anyone I talk to that we say, oh, wait, first of all, that's kind of a bold thing to say, no? Like, hey, let's set parameters. And do you literally say those words? Like, let's set parameters so we know, meaning no fist fights, like kind of define that. What do you mean parameters?
It's more like saying, I'd like to talk to you about something and I'm not sure how to approach it. So can we talk about how we're going to talk about it before we get into it? And that engages the other person and creates, they know from that you're not going to attack them.
I like how you phrase that. And then the next steps are what?
So after that, then you each see the situation differently. So what you do next is step two, you exchange perspectives. How do you see the situation and how are you being impacted? And I do the same.
And then step three?
Step three, we identify the issue. And when we're doing that, or when we're describing the issue, we describe it neutrally, broadly, and non-judgmentally. That's intended for the same thing, Christopher, to ensure that it doesn't point to a solution and it doesn't choose between you and me. It engages both of us.
And then next steps?
After that, we figure out what we want and what we want to avoid. So when we do that, then we can start to generate options, which is going to be step number five. What we see in the classic debate type of conversation is people jump to a solution, each of them, and then they argue pros and cons, and they've never figured out what they wanted or wanted to avoid. The importance of step four, when you're figuring out what you want and what you want to avoid, is there's a really high probability that what each of you wants is going to be compatible and there will be a growth in mutual understanding. That's really the objective of step four. Now, when you've completed step four, then you can move on to generating options. And it's kind of simple. What you're doing is saying, what could we do now or next or differently that would get us what we want that we just described in or identified in step four, in a way that addresses the issue that we identified in step three. The key to that, though, is to not introduce any element of explanation, justification, or defensiveness around any option. So we agree at the outset of the brainstorming that we're not going to do that. And the advantage of that is that early evaluation kills creativity. For it, so if you say, hey, Pat, I think we should do this. And I say, gee, Christopher, I think that's a dumb idea. How many more ideas are you going to give me? Zero, right? And so the idea is to postpone that evaluation until we can get to step six. So now that we know what the issue is, we know what we want to avoid in a good solution. We've now generated a series of options to achieve that. Now we can go to step six, select solutions. And in step six, what we're doing is we're saying, which of the options that we just created best get us most of what we want and help us to avoid what we want to avoid.
That's awesome, Patrick. You know what's interesting? As you're sharing these steps with me, Patrick, this pen that I have was a gift from a friend of mine named Chris Fox. He's actually a former FBI chief kidnapping negotiator. So he had to deal with extreme conflict. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called Never Split the Difference. And as you're sharing your story, actually, you're literally sharing some of his secrets as a former FBI agent negotiator, where it's really about not placing certain judgments, not taking things personal, but really understanding those parameters to see how you could really minimize that conflict. And in his case, it's life or death. In your case, and the people that are listening and watching, it's probably not life or death, but I love how simple it is, but how profound it is. Because as you said, step by step, it's a real path to get to where you are now, to where you want to go. Because you mentioned about how the questions you ask. Now, I'm just really curious. You say it so flowingly, so effortlessly, but you did a lot of research. Did you read a lot of books, or how did you find this seemingly simple questioning, but it really, there's such a deep, profound impact in how you question. So it was books you've read, studies you've made, or just primarily from your experience? Maybe
a combination. Oh, wow. It's kind of a combination. So for starters, my career as a lawyer, a trial lawyer, so knock them down, drag them out, and go get the next carcass, right? So an extreme adjudicative approach to then mediation and trying to address conflict afterward. And the whole field of conflict resolution has struggled with the idea that it's always reactive, inherently reactive. And I thought, no. There is a better mousetrap, as the saying goes. There is a way to prevent conflict before it begins. Because what we find is people have those debate-style conversations, then they end up with a lot of tension and a lot of angst, and in the worst cases, perhaps say a harassment in an office, they then eventually will engage in mediation, which is a collaborative type of process. And at that point, they resolve it and they both leave happy. So my question was, why couldn't they have done that way back there? And so that's really what I'm talking about, is changing the conversation before the conflict ever begins, before that tension arises in your office that causes each of your employees to spend 2.5 hours per week forever.
And again, Patrick, I want to remind our viewers and listeners, it's not just about the time that's wasted, it's the actual emotion that's wasted. It's the actual cortisol that goes higher. Our health is deeply affected in a negative way. So I want to stress to our viewers as well as our listeners how powerful and important your book is, because it's not just about saving time, it's about saving your life, frankly, right?
Yeah, like from a boss's point of view, perhaps it is about the time, because time is money. The human toll is incredible. I mean, stress is the pathway to illness. And so the longer we're exposed to stress, the more likely we are to get sick. People do get not just physically sick to their stomach, they actually develop diseases from living under the stress.
Yeah. And so with this book that came out, what are some of the thoughts that people have said about reading a book? Have they applied some of the books, some of the case studies you perhaps shared in your book that you share with us?
Sure. The two of my favorite pieces of feedback were people saying, this is so simple. How come nobody thought of this before? This is so easy to use. The other one was from a retired military person. And he said to me, I read your book twice. This is so simple. And now I'm thinking, if everybody had used this, I wouldn't have had a career in the military.
Patrick, that is the best testimonial that anyone can ever hope for. And again, I want to remind our listeners and viewers that sometimes, I think Einstein said this, you know, he wants his solution to be simple, not simplistic. And going back to questions, let's say I was talking to a friend of mine and he's saying, you know what, if you meet people that seem to veer more toward the negative, and instead of asking them, how is your day? You might just say, well, what was one thing that you liked about your day? But it's just reframing the question. And so much of life, as you said before, setting those parameters, asking those very basic questions, and then from there, it's just very non-judgmental. Again, as you share these things, it's pretty profound that a former chief FBI negotiator does these same things, where his all about it's all about negotiating through listening. You're listening, asking these non-judgmental questions, not saying these certain statements, but just saying how or what, or that's right, not you're right, or I'm right, that's right, or seems like. But it's all these, it's almost like jujitsu mastery. And so you have this mastery jujitsu dialogue person that is able to just craft this great story that doesn't feel judgmental, but allows people to really have that path, a collaborative path. Now for you, you've had people give you this feedback. And what's also interesting about you sharing these stories, it's not just for the workplace. It seems like if it could fit in relationships, for kids, it's almost like this Excalibur sword. And have you found that when you're sharing your book and your conversation with people, where it's not just for the workplace?
Absolutely. And we found that around training. I had developed a workshop around collaborative skills, communication skills for everyday use. And when we rolled that out through the workplace, a significant portion of the feedback was, I used this way more at home than I did at work. And it is intended, in the same way that Fisher and Urey's Getting to Yes was intended to be a scalable model from your conversation with your neighbor to international treaties, which is their background. And this model really is the same thing. You don't have to wait for the conflict to begin. When you first discover differences and you want to find an optimal outcome, you can start the collaborative model right then.
And it's so great that from the very get-go, you already have a clear path. It's like, this is the strategy. It's like chess. You know where you're going, but you have a very warm understanding and a compassionate understanding of that. So I love that. So last thing I want to talk to you about, Patrick, is the title of your book. I love the title, Collaborative. It's all about being together, but path. So many of us think of things, read things, learn things, but they don't really apply things. So in this path toward being more collaborative, what do you feel is the one step we can all make today to really understand but apply your book?
Oh, wow. That's an easy one. You know, are you familiar with the research of Dr. John Gottman?
I love the Gottman Institute. The Love Lab, okay. Yeah.
So the Love Lab, yeah. So Gottman says that from his research, his research demonstrates that more than 90% of conversations that start well, end well. And that really is the research, the evidentiary basis upon which step one is founded. So if the only thing people did differently as a result of reading my book was to set parameters for the conversation, to talk about how are we going to talk about what we're going to talk about before we get into the substance of it, that in and of itself, Christopher, would make a huge difference in everybody's life.
Patrick, thank you so much for being on our show today. Really love your topic, and it's so needed now more than ever. Thank you so much for being on our show. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Christopher.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.